Welcome to Bedtime for Brickleys, a podcast for Brickley kids that are supposed to be asleep, but maybe aren't quite sleepy yet. Listen to this episode, and maybe you'll fall asleep. Hopefully you won't even hear the end of the episode, because the sleepy sounds of my voice will cause your eyelids to grow very heavy and big yawns. Is it working? All right. Well, last time we talked about when I was up until I was about 10 years old. And obviously we can't cover everything, but I'm going to take you from the years of 10 to 15 in this episode. So from when we were living on Teeter Road, which was the house by the airport with the buffalo. Oh, we didn't even talk about the buffalo. I'll definitely need to cover that. And then when I was 12, we moved to our house in Burns. So we're going to be in Burns for most of this episode. So get your head back on your pillow, snuggle in, get your blanket up tight to your chin, and let's listen to episode 2 of Bedtime for Brickleys. So to backtrack just a little bit, when we were on Teeter Road, we left there when I was about 12, but when we were on Teeter Road, we lived next to an airport and next to a buffalo farm. And I can't believe that I didn't tell you about this last time because it was the coolest thing. When we went to check out the house for the first time, I kid you not, there was, I don't know, 10, 15 giant buffalo in a field next to this house. And if you've never seen a buffalo in person, imagine a cow. Okay. Now imagine a bigger cow. And now put a giant horned head costume, like a Halloween mask costume with a cape on it, on the bigger cow. And that's pretty close. That's basically how a buffalo seems to a 12-year-old. Well, I guess I was younger. I was 12 when we left. That's how a buffalo seems to a 9 or 10-year-old. And we never really got close to the buffalo, but they would sometimes get close to the fence. So we could go and stand, and if they were closer to the fence, see them from up close. And they were huge and very fun to look at, and always got a comment from people who would come visit us. They would comment on the airplanes constantly taking off and landing from the airport right next to our house, and the buffalo. I remember a couple, every year they would have sort of a festival at the airport as well, and they would fly really low. They had big targets painted on the ground, and the pilots would drop little bags of flour out of their planes and try and hit the target. And that always seemed like a lot of fun. My dad and my brother Andy are both pilots. Andy wasn't a pilot at that time when we lived at that airport house on Teeter Road. But dad was. And maybe once or twice per year growing up, he would rent a plane and take us all up in it. My Grandpa Johnny owned a plane before I was born. But that's probably a different story for a different episode. You can ask him about that next time you see Grandpa Johnny. Getting back to this episode, that was all a big backtrack, okay? Because that was before we moved. When I was 12, we moved away from the house on Teeter Road to the house in Burns. So before we move, let me see if I can think of anything else. I mean, there were a lot of fun memories on Teeter Road. We talked about a lot of them last time. Teeter Road is where I learned how to be by myself. We didn't have neighbors. It was a little tiny house in the middle of nowhere. And I had my brothers and sisters, but a lot of my time was spent doing kind of what you'd see Ellie doing a lot, which is just getting a thing, a book or a drawing pad or a nothing, and just kind of being off by herself alone. And it didn't feel like you were alone at the time because your mind was very busy. And Ellie, I'm sure you can relate to this, but you're drawing and you're making up characters and you're thinking about what they could say, or I'm building a mountain in the dirt pile and racing my cars down them and imagining sound effects and music and talking to people inside my head and imagining different things with animals. And I'd never really remember being bored there, even though we didn't really have a ton of toys. We didn't have a gaming system until I was a little older. I don't remember playing a lot of video games until we moved to Burns. We had one TV, speaking of entertainment systems, in Teeter Road, and I remember it was a big fight when Dad brought it home, because we were kind of a no TV family, and Dad brought a TV home, and I think my mom thought it was going to kill all of us. And that's a very funny memory, but you got to appreciate my mom trying to stand up for her kids' minds. That being said, we still didn't really watch anything on the TV. Dad would bring home tapes of Turner Classic Movies and the History Channel. If you can imagine, you know, it's something that you wouldn't probably like to watch, like history, or really old black and white movies. Those were pretty much the things that we grew up watching. Whatever Dad would tape and bring to us, you know, obviously there wasn't a Netflix or a Hulu or YouTube or anything like that. Sometimes we would rent tapes from the library. That was always fun. But we didn't have a gaming console that I can remember at Teeter Road. The last year, I believe, I moved out to the bunkhouse with Andy after Jonathan had moved away. And we hung out with our cousin Kale a lot, who is Aunt Jan's oldest son. He and Andy were best friends, and so I often found myself following them around. Do you guys know what it's like to have a younger sibling trying to hang out with you and one of your friends? Well, if you do, if you know what it's like to be annoyed by the younger sibling that wants to hang out with you and one of your cool friends, then please remember to be kind to that person, because that was me. I always felt really in the middle. I was way too young to hang out with any of the Brickley cousins. I was the young kid in that group. And I was the oldest kid on the McVeigh side, you know, with like Samuel and Stephen and everybody else over there. So I'd never really had cousins that were just my age and felt like a buddy that way. I did have a friend named Brant, and he was a friend from church. His name was Brant Copen, and I don't remember when. I was probably seven to maybe 11 or 12 is when I was hanging out with Brant, and we were best friends, and Mom would take me into their house, and I would hang out with them. They had a house in El Dorado, and they had a dog named Sherman, who was the coolest dog. He was a border collie, and he could sit, and he could roll over, and he could fetch. His favorite thing to do was to play fetch. And the coolest thing was, not only could he fetch, but he could get the thing for himself to fetch. So you would just be sitting there, and you could say, "Hey, Sherman, go find a stick." And this dog would take off. And he would go root around the yard for a second until he found something, like a stick, for us to play fetch with. And he would bring it to you, and then you could throw it, and just, he would do that for hours. and he would fetch lots of different things too. Brant and I had a lot of fun. He would come out to our house as well. We would sit next to each other in church and write pictures and play paper battle, like what I taught you, Ellie. I used to play that with Brant and Clara. Sorry, I know I played it with both of you. Brant and I stopped hanging out when we weren't going to the same church for a while. And I don't remember exactly what age, but I remember there was 3 or 4 years where me and Brant weren't best friends. I was hanging out with other people and we didn't see them as much. And then I met up with him again when I started going to the First Baptist Church youth group. Actually, he invited me to the First Baptist Church youth group. But that's going to be right at the end of this episode, because that was when I was like 14 or 15. So let's go to when I was 12 years old. We moved to Burns, Kansas. Not literally, because that's where the Hatfields live. We moved to a brick house by the pumpkin patch. And it was just close enough to Burns and just far enough away from El Dorado that that's where our address was. So what do I remember about Burns? I remember it was so exciting because our house on Teeter Road was so small. The house at Burns was so exciting. We had all these bedrooms. It was a big house, even as an adult looking back. It was a very big house. Ranch style house, which means just it was shaped like a big L, and there wasn't an upstairs. It was just a main level, and then there was a basement. Quite a few. Let me see. 1, 2, 3 bedrooms upstairs and 2 bathrooms, and then 1, 2 big bedrooms downstairs. Oh, there was no bathroom downstairs. I forgot about that. And we would have to go all the way upstairs to use the bathroom. Wow, things were hard when I was a kid. How about that? Jonathan got his own room. Wait a second. Jonathan. Yeah, no, he lived there. I'm getting very confused because I thought I'm going to need one of my brothers or somebody to listen to this podcast and tell me where I'm wrong, because I thought that Jonathan moved away while we were at Teeter Road, and then I moved out to the bunkhouse. But Jonathan lived with us at Burns, so that must not be the case. Maybe I never did live in the bunkhouse. Guys, this is hard. You should start writing stuff down now. Okay, keep a journal, because your kids are going to want to know someday, and you're not going to remember all the deets. But Uncle Jonathan was definitely there with us at Burns for a minute. He had his own room, and then Andy and I shared a room. And so the three of us boys kind of had the downstairs all to ourselves. And then Aunt Molly and Missy had a room upstairs. And Uncle Ryan was born right at the end of Teeter Road, so he had kind of a nursery upstairs. And then Mom and Dad had a bedroom. Wow, this is a blast from the past. I'm trying to remember all this stuff. So what I was saying earlier was the house at Burns was exciting. The land wasn't quite as exciting to me right off, because we had a big yard and there was a little pond, but there were people around this time. And Teeter Road, there was nobody around. It was a little tiny house, but there was so much land and so many trees and ponds and all the tree houses that we built. We were very sad about leaving all those. One thing that we decided to do at Burns was, instead of building a bunch of little tree houses, we were going to build one. Andy and I were going to work together and build one amazing tree house, like a real house in a tree. And we did. We used one of my ideas. I read a book about tree houses, and we found a cottonwood tree that had 4 giant trunks. And instead of fixing the beams to the trunks, we used kind of a floating platform idea that I found in one of my books. which is where you hooked one side of the board to one of the trunks, but on the other side, it was just held up by a chain. So when the tree moved around, it wouldn't bend and twist the wood. It all kind of just floated there. And almost everything else was Andy's idea, although I do remember coming up with a couple good designs for the elevator. Because, guys, I kid you not, we built a real working elevator onto this treehouse. And looking back, what were my parents thinking? This was so dangerous. The treehouse itself was a wooden platform that was probably 20 feet up in the air, which feels very high. Just to give you a comparison, our back deck right now is probably about 10 feet. So if you can imagine being twice as high as that deck, and the platform was maybe two times bigger than the deck. And so after we got the platform built, we built a little house on it. And that was mostly Uncle Andy. He was very good with just the precision and the work ethic of just doing something so repetitive and boring to me and hard over and over and over until he had created something amazing. And it was amazing. Our little treehouse even had its own little loft on the inside. And he put a roof on it to protect it from the rain. And then we built an elevator. And the elevator was essentially a pulley system where you had weights on one side. And then a rope went up through a pulley, over another pulley, and then back down to a cage. And that cage is where the people would stand. And so when they would, so imagine you're at the top of the platform, you're up in the treehouse. Well, you just get in the cage and you just step off onto the elevator. And the whole thing would kind of come down and the weights would go up. Well, then if you stepped off at the bottom, obviously the weights would, you know, the weights would crash down and the elevator would fly up. So we built something at the bottom to kind of hold the elevator to the ground. There was also a pole that we installed, kind of like a fireman's pole, where you could help pull yourself up if you were a little heavier or a little lighter. You had to use the pole to either pull yourself up or kind of hold yourself down. It's not safe. Not safe at all. Praise the Lord, no one got hurt on that. It is frankly a miracle. So we spent a lot of time working on that. But when we weren't working on that, I was being homeschooled and working with Grandpa Johnny. I did a lot of different things for Grandpa Johnny. The earliest things, Clara, when I was probably your age, I remember starting to go to work with Dad. And in those days, I didn't really do much. I just kind of rode around with him. And I would, you know, if we were working on a car, I'd hold the flashlight. If we were remodeling a room, I would hand him a box of screws, you know, but I didn't do much actual work. Painting. Did a lot of painting in the apartment buildings. I hate painting. Probably because of that. One of my first real jobs was working in Dad's laundromat. Grandpa Johnny bought a laundromat, which is a place with hundreds of washers and dryers. And people can go there with a handful of quarters and wash and dry their clothes. So not everybody can afford to have a washer and dryer in their house, or maybe theirs has broken, or maybe there's just not enough room. Maybe you're a college kid and you don't have enough room in your little apartment. So people would go into town and go to the laundromat to do their laundry. Well, I would just sit there behind the counter and help people if they had any questions and, you know, fix things occasionally if they were broken. But one of the main things that I did there was actually to wash other people's clothes. Can you imagine? It was crazy. So we had a service where people could just drop off their laundry and pay a little bit extra, and we would do all of the work for them. So that was a big part of what I did all day, was to take other people's dirty laundry and wash it and dry it and fold it and put it in bags. And then when they would come, you know, they would pay for it and I would check them out. And I only did that for one summer, and frankly, it was awful. But it was a job, and it taught me how much I hated working. I think if I was going to say it nicely, I would say it taught me how much I realized that that type of work was not for me. So started out that was the beginning of my journey to try and find a job that I actually liked. I've done a lot of jobs that make a lot of money. Around that time also, maybe when I was 13 or 14, in the summers is when I started actually doing hard work in the oil field. And I spent one summer on the pulling rig, which is basically, we don't need to get into too many of the details, but basically it was just like a lot of running and lifting. And then most of the remainder of my summers until I moved out from when I was 18 or 19, I worked as a pipe tester. So that was a crazy job that actually Uncle Andy and Grandpa Johnny, they're all still doing, which is where they filled these long metal pipes up with water, and you put a hose on both ends of them, and then you pressure it up. And if it explodes, then it's bad. And if it doesn't, then it's good. And you throw the ones that are bad away and tell the people who hired you to come test the pipes which ones are bad and how many new ones they need to buy. But it was a lot of just being out in the snow and lifting heavy things, or being out in the 100-degree heat and lifting heavy things while you're covered in oil and grease. And a little bit like the laundromat, I was like, I don't want to do this. This is just a way to make money. Now, I will say, when I started high school, I was making, I think, like $13 an hour. And that was crazy. That was a crazy amount of money for a 16-year-old to make. And my friends were jealous, but I would tell them, listen, it's not all it's cracked up to be. But 16 is for a different episode, so we need to rewind a little bit. When I was 12, I had been playing the guitar since I was about 8, because my brother Jonathan did. I wanted to be like Jonathan, and he said, you should learn to play the guitar too. Andy wasn't interested. And I was like, yes, that sounds amazing. Let's do it. And I started taking guitar lessons. I had taken piano lessons from Grandma Etta and didn't really like it. I would not practice like I was supposed to. And then the day that, you know, Mom would tell us, hey, Grandma's going to come out this afternoon for piano lessons, I would go and sit down and actually practice for a little while so that I could be ready for the lesson. And I actually got away with it for a long time because of that. I think my brain and the piano work really well together. But I wasn't interested in it, and so I didn't practice, so I didn't get very good. Well, when I was about 12, Grandma Etta paid for me to go take a one-hour class at the college that was about the piano. And basically, it was about making the piano fun. And I loved it. And in that class, I learned that I could take all of the guitar music that I've been working on for the last 4 years, they showed me a way that I could play all of that guitar music on the piano right now. And I was like, that is so much fun. I can play all these songs that I like to play on the guitar. I can play them on the piano today. And so I did. And then I just didn't stop playing the piano. And I would play the piano for at least an hour every day, sometimes a couple hours per day. And, you know, you can't imagine. I was trying to practice beforehand. They say you should practice for 15 minutes every day. And that was just terrible. I hated it when it wasn't fun and when I wasn't interested in it. But then all of a sudden, when the piano became fun and it was interesting to me, I couldn't stop doing it. So that is why, just in case any of you Brickleys are wondering, why Dad, the piano's been such a big part of my life, music has as well, but I've never made you guys take lessons or, you know, tried to teach you myself, because we have a lot of instruments around, and I just think whenever you guys want to, whenever it's interesting and it sounds fun, I think you will do it. And not just the piano, you'll do whatever you want. So maybe you want to be, you want to get into chemistry, or you want to start writing stories, or you want to draw cartoons, or you want to, whatever you want to do. I just mean, I don't really care to just try and make something interesting to you. I'm kind of waiting and watching each one of you to find out what's interesting to you. And then I want to help support those hobbies. I would love it if it was the piano and music. I've had a lot of fun doing those myself. So that was a huge part of what I did in Burns, because we had a piano in this outside room that used to be a garage, and we converted it into a game room. There was a ping pong table and a pool table and a foosball table. And that's where my drum set was for a while. But there was a piano out there, and I would just be out there all the time playing. Around that time, my old best friend Brant invited me to go to his youth group in Augusta, at the First Baptist Church. And I had a handful of friends at the time from the church that we were going to in El Dorado, but I hadn't seen Brant in a long time, and I wasn't doing any sort of youth group thing. So I decided to go and check it out. And it felt crazy to me, because I had been homeschooled, and the only like times I was around a lot of other people was at church. So this was definitely still church, but it was a big group of kids. And most of these kids were public school kids from the Augusta High School. So that felt like wild and crazy to me, even though looking back, it really wasn't. And you guys are, you know, already, you know, so young, and you're already in these big groups of loud, crazy kids. So you're experiencing that way younger than what I did. But I felt like I was walking into, you know, how you guys must have felt walking into school for the first time. That's how I felt. And I was, you know, probably 14. But it was really fun. And I remember making friends pretty quickly. There were some people that didn't like me, and that was weird to me. There were some people that did like me, and we became friends. And so that youth group in Augusta was really the first time that I had experienced social situations as a teenager. And there's lots of movies about being an awkward teenager, and I definitely was one, and trying to figure out what is my personality and what makes people laugh, and, you know, what do I say? And I said so many things that were wrong, and people would make fun of me. And then I said some things that were right, and people would laugh. And I was just doing that over and over. I was experimenting a lot, I guess, on trying to figure out how to make other people happy, how to make people laugh, and really trying to find out who I was. I only went there for about a year before my best friend Brant, he found out that his family was moving to Ohio. And that was really sad for me, because he was still the person that I sat next to and hung out with, stuck by his side every time that I was at that youth group. and now he was leaving. So I was very shaken by that. And saying goodbye to him was really hard. I had a couple friends, and so I decided to still go to that youth group. And I ended up going on a couple missions trips with them. The first one was to New York City. Brant was there for that one. And then the second one was to Canada. And both of those were beautiful. A lot of silly teenage drama that you guys will be... I mean, it doesn't seem silly at the time. When you're 15 years old, things seem big. And the feelings that you feel, a lot of feelings for the first time, and they feel big. And it's really hard to explain to people. And you cry a lot, turns out. So we're gonna all walk through that together. And I'm excited. I know it's gonna be terrible sometimes, but I'm excited because you girls are gonna be like freaking out about some drama. Somebody said this to me or about me, and you wouldn't understand, Dad, and you slam your door. Listen, I get it. Big feelings through there. But I'm never gonna leave you, and I will always help you figure those things out, and we will figure it out together. Okay. Boys, good luck. Just kidding. But I remember the time at the Augusta youth group. I'm pretty happy about that time overall, because even though I was awkward and I was learning things and my voice was changing and I had zits on my face, there's all these crazy things happening. I was figuring out who I was. And more than that, I was even kind of deciding who I wanted to be. And I realized during that time that I want to be somebody who makes people laugh. And I love the feeling that I get when I can make somebody else happy. That makes me happy. And I just decided or discovered that that was a part of who I am. And that's been that way ever since. That's definitely who I am today. And that's kind of the first times that I started to figure that out myself back then. And my time in Augusta really started to prepare me for high school, which started when I was 15. I got my first vehicle. I had three or four vehicles for just like a few months. It was kind of a weird time, actually. If there were a whole bunch of old cars coming through our household that were breaking down or that we would sell or something like that. So I do remember a brown Ford Ranger pickup that was my cousin Brandon's that I had for a minute. I had a Chevy Astro van for a second, and then another gray Ford Ranger pickup. There was a Dodge Intrepid. These things don't mean anything to you, but for me, I mean, they were my first vehicles. These were huge. It was crazy to be able to not have to have mom or dad take you somewhere, drop you off or pick you up. You know, the first time that you can just go get in a car and just go somewhere by yourself, it's a crazy feeling. And that was around that time when I got my restricted permit, which means I could drive to school or work. And I got that because I was preparing to go to Trinity Academy. I was going to be the only Brickley so far that had gone as a freshman, which means the first year that you're allowed to go to high school. Jonathan and Andy had each homeschooled through their freshman year and then started going to Trinity the second year that you're allowed to go to high school as a sophomore. But I was going to go all 4 years, and so I was really getting ready for that in Augusta. Well, next episode, we'll talk about the years of 16 to 20. And those are fun years because that's a lot about high school. And one of the coolest things, I had one of the saddest things that had ever happened to me in high school. And I had one of the coolest thing that's ever happened to me right after high school, which was when I met Molly Farrell. And I will tell you all about that in the next episode. Thanks for listening to Bedtime for Brickleys. Hopefully you're already asleep. But if not, it's time to close your eyes, take a deep breath, maybe one more big yawn. Okay, good night.